Meg Wynne Owen and Patrick Allen in the fifth and final episode of Jane Eyre, adapted for radio by Barbara Cooper from a novel by Charlotte Bronte. St. John Rivers visited Jane Eyre in the little cottage where she taught the village children to tell her that he had something important to communicate to her. She was astonished when he told her the story of her own life.
19 years ago, an orphan was reared by an aunt-in-law, Mrs. Reed of Gateshead.
Oh.
Are you start? Did you hear a noise? Shall I continue?
Please. Go on with your story.
Mrs. Reed kept the orphan 10 years. Then she transferred the child to Lowood School, where you so long resided yourself. It seems her career there was very honourable. From a pupil, she became a teacher. She left Lowood to undertake the post of governess in the household of a certain Mr. Rochester.
Mr. Rivers!
I can guess your feelings, but please hear me to the end. Of Mr. Rochester's character, I know nothing, but the one fact that he professed to offer honourable marriage to this young girl, and that at the very altar she discovered that he had a wife yet alive, though a lunatic. So the governess left Thornfield Hall in the night. Yet, that she should now be found is become a matter of serious urgency. Advertisements have been put in all the papers. I myself have received a letter from one Mr. Briggs, a solicitor, communicating the details I have just imparted. Is it not an odd tale?
Just tell me this. What of Mr. Rochester? How and where is he? What is he doing? Is he well?
I am ignorant of all concerning Mr. Rochester. He must have been a bad man.
You don't know him. Don't pronounce an opinion upon him.
Very well. But since you won't ask me the governess's name, I must tell it of my own accord. Stay, I have it here. Yes. See? Jane Eyre, written in your own handwriting. Work doubtless of some moments of abstraction. Briggs wrote to me of a Jane Eyre. I knew a Jane Elliot. I confess I had my suspicions. You own the name and renounce the alias.
Oh, yes, yes. But where is Mr. Briggs? He perhaps knows more of Mr. Rochester.
It is not in Mr. Rochester he is interested. You do not inquire why Mr. Briggs sought after you. What he wanted with you.
Well, what did he want?
Merely to tell you that your uncle, Mr. Eyre of Madeira, is dead. That he has left you all his property and that you are now rich. Merely that, nothing more.
I? Rich?
Yes, you, rich. Quite an heiress. £20,000, I think they say.
£20,000?
Well, if you had committed a murder, you could scarcely look more aghast.
But don't you think there is a mistake?
No mistake at all. If it were not such a very wild night, I would send Hannah down to keep you company. You look too desperately miserable to be left alone. But Hannah, poor woman, could not stride the snowdrifts as well as I. Her legs are not quite so long, so I must e'en leave you to your sorrows. Good night.
Stop. 1 minute.
Well?
It puzzles me to know why Mr. Briggs wrote to you about me. Or how he knew you.
The clergy are often appealed to about odd matters.
No. That does not satisfy me. I must know more about it.
Another time.
No. You certainly shall not go till you've told me all.
I would rather not, just now.
You shall and you must.
Well, then, I yield. If not to your earnestness, to your perseverance. Your name is Jane Eyre. You are not perhaps aware that I was christened St. John Eyre Rivers.
Oh, indeed.
My mother's name was Eyre. She had two brothers. One, a clergyman, who married Miss Reed of Gateshead. The other, John Eyre of Madeira. Mr. Briggs wrote and informed us of our uncle's death, you remember, and said that he had left his property to his brother the clergyman's orphan daughter. A name casually written on a slip of paper has enabled me to find her. Now I must be gone.
No. No, let me speak. My Uncle John was your Uncle John?
Yes.
You? Diana and Mary? You three then are my cousins.
We are cousins, yes.
Oh, this is wealth indeed. Wealth to the heart. Oh, I'm glad. I am glad.
You were serious when I told you had got a fortune. And now, for a matter of no moment, you are excited.
What can you mean? It may be of no moment to you. You have sisters and don't care for a cousin. But I have nobody. And now three relations are born into my world full grown. I say again, I am glad. Write to Diana and Mary tomorrow and tell them to come home directly. With 5,000 each, they will do well.
Tell me where I can get you a glass of water. You really must try and calm yourself.
And will it induce you to marry Miss Oliver and settle down like an ordinary mortal?
I have been too abrupt in communicating the news. It has excited you beyond your strength.
Mr. Rivers, you quite put me out of patience. You cannot fail to see that £20,000 divided equally will give 5,000 to each of us. Besides, I am resolved I will have a home and connections. I like Moor House, and I will live at Moor House. I like Diana and Mary, and I will attach myself for life to Diana and Mary.
This is acting on first impulses. You must take days to consider such a matter.
You are not reluctant to admit me in only, are you?
Jane, I will be your brother. My sisters will be your sisters.
Thank you. Well, that contents me tonight. Now, you better go. For if you stay longer, you will perhaps irritate me afresh by some mistrustful scruple.
And the school, Miss Eyre? It must now be shut up, I suppose.
No. I will retain my post of mistress till you get a substitute.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Happy at Moor House I was, and hard I worked, and so did Hannah. How we dusted and brushed and cleaned and cooked. My purpose was to have all in absolute readiness for Diana and Mary's arrival. Sweet indeed was the evening of their homecoming. My cousins, full of exhilaration, were so eloquent in narrative and comment that their fluency covered St. John's taciturnity. For he did not keep his promise in treating me like his sisters. He continually made little chilling differences between us. One morning at breakfast, his silence was more marked than usual.
St. John, tell me, are your future plans unchanged?
Unchanged and unchangeable. My departure for India is settled. I will go next year.
And Rosamond Oliver?
Rosamond Oliver is about to be married.
Married? To whom?
Mr. Granby, grandson and heir to Sir Frederick Granby. I had the intelligence from her father yesterday.
The match must have been arranged hastily. They can hardly have known each other long.
2 months. We met in October. There are no obstacles to the union. The connection is in every point desirable, so delays are unnecessary.
The first time I found St. John alone after this communication, I felt tempted to inquire if the event distressed him. But to my surprise, he raised it himself.
You see, Jane, the battle is fought and the victory won.
But are you sure you're not in the position of those conquerors whose triumphs have cost them too dear? Would not such another ruin you?
I think not. The event of the conflict is decisive. My way is now clear. I thank God for it.
So saying, he returned to his papers, and we never spoke of Rosamond Oliver again. As our mutual happiness, Diana's, Mary's, and mine, settled into a quieter character, we resumed our usual habits and regular studies. Mary drew, Diana pursued a course of encyclopedic reading, I fagged away at German, and St. John deciphered crabbed oriental scrolls. And so winter gave way to spring.
Ah, there. Ah, I have finished for today. Not 1 minute more do I study Mary.
Nor I, Diana. I should clear the cobwebs by working in the garden.
St. John, will it interrupt your studies if I practice some music in the drawing room? St. John.
Hmm? What is it, Diana? What are you saying?
I wish to play. I will endeavor to use the soft pedal only.
And I shall endeavor to continue my studies undisturbed.
Jane, come now with me to the garden. You look pale and tired with the fierceness of your concentration.
She is very well as she is. Leave her to work.
Ah, Jane would never tell you if she were tired, St. John. Why, only yesterday, when you sent her up to Morton School and all that wind and rain...
Oh, Diana, I would rather...
Jane is not such a weakling as you would make her. She can bear a mountain blast or a shower as well as any of us.
And Jane says, thank you, Mary. I will study for half an hour longer, and then I will join you in the garden.
And not another book do you open this day.
Even to please Brother St. John.
10. What do you read?
Schiller.
I want you to give up German and learn Hindustani.
You are not in earnest.
In such earnest that I must have it so. I am studying it myself at present. It would assist me greatly to have a pupil. Will you do me this favor?
Why, yes, St. John, I consent. It will doubtless prove an interesting study.
Jane.
Yes?
I go in 6 weeks.
God will protect you, for you have undertaken his work.
Yes. There is my glory and joy. It seems strange to me that all round me do not burn to enlist under the same banner.
All have not your powers.
I do not speak of the feeble or think of them. I address only such as are worthy of the work.
Those are few in number.
You say truly. But when found, it is right to stir them up, to exhort and urge them to effort.
If they are really qualified for the task, will not their own hearts be the first to inform them of it?
And what does your heart say?
My heart is mute. My heart is mute.
Then I must speak for it. Jane, come with me to India. Come as my helpmeet and fellow laborer.
Oh, St. John, have some mercy.
God and nature intended you for a missionary's wife. It is not personal, but mental endowments they have given you. You are formed for labor, not for love.
I am not fit for it. I have no vocation.
Who is fit for it? Or who that ever was truly called believed himself worthy of the summons? I, for instance, am but dust and ashes.
St. John, I cannot answer you at once. I must have time to think.
That is a reasonable enough request. I will leave
you. No. Wait. There is one point upon which I am able to answer you now.
And that is?
I am ready to go to India, if I may go free.
You do not make yourself clear.
As your sister, I will accompany you. Not as your wife.
If you were my real sister, it would be different. I should take you and seek no wife. It is not the insignificant private individual, the mere man with man's selfish senses that I wish to mate. It is a missionary.
I repeat, I freely consent to go with you as your fellow missionary, but not as your wife.
A part of me you must become. How can I, a man not yet 30, take out with me to India a girl of 19 unless she be married to me? Undoubtedly enough of love would follow upon the marriage to render the union right even in your eyes.
I scorn your idea of love. I scorn the counterfeit sentiment you offer. Yes, St. John, and I scorn you when you offer it.
I scarcely expected to hear that expression from you. I think I have done and uttered nothing to deserve it.
Oh, forgive me the words, but it is your own fault that I have been roused to speak so unguardedly. St. John, I must tell you this. Before I definitely resolve on quitting England, I will know for certain whether I cannot be of greater use by remaining in it than by leaving it.
What do you mean?
Oh, it would be fruitless to try to explain. But there is a point in which I have long endured painful doubt. I can go nowhere. So by some means that doubt is removed.
We will wait a few moments, Jane, until you are more composed. That is better. Now we can proceed. I know where your heart turns and to what it clings. The interest you cherish is lawless and unconsecrated. Long since you ought to have crushed it. Now you should blush to allude to it. You think of Mr. Rochester. Are you going to see him?
I must find out what has become of him. I've written to Mr. Briggs, Mrs. Fairfax. I've had no reply to my letters.
It remains for me, then, to remember you in my prayers. Tomorrow I leave home for Cambridge. I have friends there to whom I wish to say farewell.
Will you not shake hands with me, St. John? And forgive me?
I am not in the habit of cherishing the remembrance of vexation. And not having been offended, there is nothing to forgive.
But we cannot part so. I beg
you. You must excuse me. I have work to do in the parish.
Ah, oh, St. John, I would much rather you'd knock me down.
Jane!
Yes?
You're breaking your word. Come and help me in the garden.
Yes, Mary. Give me a few moments.
Jane, you are agitated, all pale. Tell me what business St. John and you have on hand.
It is no matter, Diana. Yes, I am indeed troubled for the moment, but soon I shall regain my self-control.
That brother of mine cherishes peculiar views of some sort respecting you, I am sure. He has long distinguished you by a notice and interest he never showed to anyone else. To what end? I wish he loved you. Does he, Jane?
No, Diana. Not one whit.
Oh, then why does he follow you so with his eyes and get you so frequently alone with him? Mary and I had both concluded he wished you to marry him.
He does. He has asked me to be his wife.
Oh, that is just what we thought and hoped. And you will marry him, Jane, won't you? And then he will stay in England.
Far from that, Diana. His sole idea in proposing to me is to procure a fitting fellow labourer in his Indian toils.
What? He wishes you to go to India?
Yes.
Oh, madness! You would not live 3 months there. Oh, you have not consented, have you, Jane?
I have refused to marry him.
And have consequently displeased him?
Deeply. He will never forgive me, I fear. Yet I offered to accompany him as his sister.
Oh, it was frantic folly to do so, Jane. The task would kill you. I am astonished you found courage to refuse his hand. You do not love him, then, Jane?
Not as a husband.
Oh, yet he's a handsome fellow.
And I am so plain. You see, Di, we should never so
plain. You? Oh, not at all. You are much too pretty, as well as too good to be grilled alive in Calcutta. What makes you say he does not love you, Jane?
He has explained that it is not himself, but his office he wishes to mate. He has told me I am formed for labor, not for love.
Oh.
But if I am not formed for love, it follows that I am not formed for marriage. Oh, would it not be strange, Diana, to be chained for life to a man who regarded one but as a useful tool?
Oh, insupportable. Unnatural. Out of the question. And yet, St. John is a good man.
He is a good man and a great man. But he forgets pitilessly the feelings and claims of little people in pursuing his own large views. Here he comes. I thought he'd left for the parish. No, I cannot see him again at the moment. I will leave you, Diana. He did not leave for Cambridge the next day as he said he would. He deferred his departure a whole week. And during that time, he made me feel what severe punishment a good, yet stern, a conscientious, yet implacable man can inflict on one who has offended him. He did not abstain from conversing with me. He even called me as usual each morning to join him at his desk. All this was torture to me. The night before he finally left home for Cambridge, happening to see him gazing out of a parlour window about sunset, and remembering as I looked at him that this man, alienated as he now was, had once saved my life, and that we were near relations,
I was moved to make a last attempt to regain his friendship. St. John?
Yes?
I am unhappy because you are still angry with me. Let us be friends.
I hope we are friends.
No, St. John, we are not friends as we were. You know that.
Are we not? That is wrong. For my part, I wish you no ill and all good.
I believe you, for I'm sure you're incapable of wishing anyone ill. But as I am your kinswoman, I should desire somewhat more of affection than the sort of general philanthropy you extend to mere strangers.
I am far from regarding you as a stranger.
Must we part in this way, St. John? And when you go to India, will you leave me so without a kinder word than you've yet spoken?
When I go to India, Jane, will I leave you?
You said I could not go unless I married you.
You adhere to that resolution?
St. John, I will not marry you.
Once more, why this refusal?
Formerly, because you did not love me. Now I reply, because you almost hate me. If I were to marry you, you would kill me. You are killing me now.
I should kill you? I am killing you? Your words are such as ought not to be used. Violent, unfeminine, and untrue.
Now you will indeed hate me. I see I've made an eternal enemy of you. St. John, you utterly misinterpret my words. I have no intention to grieve or pain you. Indeed, I've not.
And now you recall your promise and will not go to India at all, I presume.
Yes, I will. As your assistant.
A female curate who is not my wife would never suit me.
St. John, we cannot part in this fashion. You must know that with you I would have ventured much, because I admire, confide in, and as a sister, I love you.
I had thought I had recognized in you one of the chosen. But God sees not as man sees. His will be done.
Then I can but say good night and wish you a pleasant journey tomorrow.
Thank you, Jane. I shall return from Cambridge in a fortnight. That space, then, is yet left you for reflection. If I listened to human pride, I should say no more to you of marriage with me.
Oh, I beg of you, no more, for pity's sake.
But I listen to my duty and keep steadily in view my first aim, to do all things to the glory of God. I cannot give you up to perdition as a vessel of wrath. Repent, resolve while there is yet time.
You must believe me when I say that I sincerely, deeply, and fervently long to do what is right, and only that.
Remember, we are bid to work while it is day. Remember, the night cometh when no man shall work. God give you strength to choose that better part which shall not be taken from you.
Vengeance, vengeance. Do not tempt me to cease this struggle. I cannot yield. I must not yield. Oh. And yet within me, all is changing suddenly.
Religion calls. Angels beckon. God commands.
If I were but certain, I could decide. No, leave me.
Come here to me, Jane. Jane, could you decide now?
I can resist your wrath, but do not be gentle with me.
Jane, come decide. Give me your answer.
Were I but convinced it is God's will I should marry you, I could vow to marry you here and now. Come afterwards, what would?
My prayers are heard. My prayers are heard.
Oh, heaven above, show me what is right. Show me the path.
Jane.
Oh, God, what is it?
What have you heard? What do you see?
I'm coming. Wait for me!
Jane! Come back!
Come indoors! Where are you going? What has happened?
Where are you?
Jane, come back into the house. Calm yourself. What has happened that you should behave in so unseemly a manner?
You must forbear to question me, St. John.
I cannot submit.
I desire you to leave me. I must.
and will be alone.
Very well. If that is your wish.
Oh, God, my soul rushes out in gratitude at thy feet. Grant thy help and guidance. My beloved master needs me. Lead me to him.
I rose from my knees, formed a resolution, and went to my chamber, eager but for the daylight. I rose at dawn, busied myself for an hour or two with arranging my things in the order wherein I should wish to leave them during a brief absence. Meantime, I heard St. John quit his room. He stopped at mine. I feared he would knock, but a slip of paper was passed under the door. I took it up.
You left me too suddenly last night. Had you stayed but a little longer, you would have laid your hand on the Christian's cross and the angel's crown. I shall expect your clear decision when I return this day fortnight. Meantime, watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. I shall pray for you hourly. Yours, St. John.
The 1st of June. What a dull and chilly morning St. John has chosen for his journey.
He left for Cambridge at dawn, Jane.
Yes. I saw him through my window. Diana, Mary, I too have a journey to make this morning.
Oh, you, Jane?
Yes, Diana. I shall be absent at least 4 days.
Do you go alone, Jane?
Yes, Mary, alone. It is to see or hear news of a friend about whom I have for some time been uneasy.
Why, of course, Jane. You must always feel free to do just as you wish.
Yes, of course, dear Jane.
Are you well enough to travel?
Indeed, you look pale. Nothing ails me save anxiety of mind, and that I hope soon to alleviate.
Then that is all that need be said. You must take some sandwiches. We must inform Hannah, and then do all we can in order to give you a comfortable journey.
It was a journey of 6 and 30 hours. And early on the succeeding Thursday morning, the coach stopped to water the horses at a wayside inn. I descended. The brightening day gleamed on the sign of the inn, and I read in gilt letters, "The Rochester Arms." My heart leapt up. I was already on my master's very lands. How fast I walked, how I ran sometimes. Another field crossed, a lane threaded, and there were the courtyard walls. The house itself, the rookery, still hid. My first view of it shall be in front, I determined, where its bold battlements will strike the eye nobly at once, and where I can single out my master's very window. I had coasted along the lower wall of the orchard, turned its angle. Now I could peep round quietly at the full front of the mansion. The lawn, the grounds were trodden and waste. The portal yawned void. I saw a blackened ruin. No roof, no battlements, no chimneys. All had crashed in. There was the silence of death about it. The solitude of some lonesome wild. No wonder that letters addressed to people here had never received an answer. The grim blackness of the stones told by what fate the hall had fallen, by conflagration. But how kindled? What story belonged to this disaster? Had life been wrecked as well as property? If so, whose? Dreadful question. There was no one here to answer it. And oh, Where was the hapless owner of the wreck? Some reply must be had to these questions. I could find it nowhere but at the inn, and thither ere long I repaired.
And you were pleased to wait here in the parlour, ma'am?
Thank you.
You look right down poorly. Is there aught I can do for you?
Oh, nothing, thank you.
I'll tell him to hurry with the breakfast. Oh, here's Maester bringing it himself.
Here, ma'am. The best meal the Rochester Arms can provide at this early hour in the morning.
Oh, indeed, I'm anxious not to inconvenience you.
No trouble, ma'am. I trust it'll be to your liking.
Sir, will you shut the door and sit down? I have some questions I should like to put to you.
Very good, ma'am.
And yet I scarce know how to begin. You know Thornfield Hall, of course.
Yes, ma'am, I lived there once.
Did you?
I was the late Mr. Rochester's butler.
The late? Is he dead?
Oh, I mean the present gentleman's father.
Oh.
I suppose you're a stranger in these parts, so you'd have heard what happened last autumn. The hall was burnt down. A dreadful calamity. The fire broke out at dead of night.
At dead of night? Was it known how it originated?
We guessed, ma'am. We guessed. You, not perhaps aware that there was a lunatic kept in the house.
I have heard something of it.
And this lady, ma'am, turned out to be Mr. Rochester's wife. The discovery was brought about in the strangest way. There was a governess at the hall that Mr. Rochester fell in love
with. But the fire?
I'm coming to that, ma'am. That Mr. Rochester fell in love with. She was a little, small thing, they say, almost like a child.
You should tell me this part of the story another time. Was it suspected that this lunatic had any hand in the fire?
You've hit it, ma'am. It's quite certain that it was her. Now, this governess I was telling you about had run away 2 months before. And for all Mr. Rochester thought her as if she had been the most precious thing he had in the world, he never could hear a word of her.
Oh.
And he grew savage. Quite savage in his disappointment. He sent Mrs. Fairfax, the housekeeper, away, and Mr. Dell, a ward he had, was put to school. And he shut himself up like a hermit at the hall.
Then he was at home when the fire broke out?
Yes, indeed he was. He went up to the attics when all was burning and got the servants out of their beds. And then he went back to get his mad wife. And they called out to him that she was on the roof. She was a big woman, had long black hair. We could see it streaming against the flames as she stood. I witnessed Mr. Rochester ascend through the skylight onto the roof, and we heard him call, "Bertha!" We saw him approach her. And then, Mum, she yelled, or gave a spring, and the next minute she lay smashed on the pavement. Dead as the stones on which her brains and blood were scattered.
Good God.
You may well say so, Mum. They were frightful.
Were any other lives lost?
No. Perhaps it would have been better if they had.
What do you mean?
Poor Mr. Rochester. Many think he had better be dead.
Why? How?
He's stone blind. One hand so crushed that Mr. Carter, the surgeon, had to amputate it directly. He's now helpless indeed. Blind and a cripple.
Where is he? Where does he now live?
At Ferndean. A manor house on a farm he has about 30 miles off. It's quite a desolate spot.
Who is with him?
Old John and his wife. He'd have no one else. He's quite broken down, they say.
Have you any sort of conveyance?
Ah, we have a chaise, ma'am. A very handsome chaise.
Let it be got ready instantly. And if your postboy can drive me to Ferndean before dark this day, I'll pay both you and him twice the hire you usually demand.
Yes, who is it? What do you want?
Mary, how are you?
Miss?
Oh, do not be so alarmed, Mary.
Is it really you, miss?
come at this late hour to this lonely place. Come in. Come in to the fire. John. John. Look here, you come.
Why? Bless my soul, if it isn't Miss Eyre.
Yes, John. I am indeed glad to see both you and Mary once again. I have heard all that has happened since I left Thornfield, and I have come to see Mr. Rochester.
Oh, that was a terrible time they went through. None thought to see him alive again.
Master, we as souls would have been burnt alive in our beds.
That is true, miss.
Sometimes it do seem the good Lord makes some pain more than they do.
Mary, if you can so arrange it, I shall stay here the night.
It is easy done, miss. This is Master's bed. Bless me, now what shall I
say? Tell him that a person wishes to speak to him, but do not give my name.
Well, I don't think he'll see you. He refuses everybody.
Did he ring for that glass of water and the candles?
Yes, he always has candles brought in at dark, though he is blind.
Give the tray to me. I will carry it in.
Give me the water, Mary. What is the matter? This is you, Mary, is it not?
Mary is in the kitchen.
Who is this? Who is this? Answer me. Speak again.
Will you have a little more water, sir? Huh? I spilt half of what was in the glass.
Who is this? What is it?
Pilate knows me, and John and Mary know I am here. I came only this evening.
Oh, great God. What sweet madness has seized me. Oh, I cannot see, but I must feel, or my heart will stop and my brain burst. Whatever, whoever you are, be perceptible to the touch, or I cannot live.
There, sir. There.
Very fingers. Small, slight fingers. Is it, Jane? This is her shape. This is her size.
And this is her voice. Oh. She is all here. Her heart, too. Oh, God bless you, sir. I am glad to be so near you again.
Oh, Jane Eyre. Jane Eyre. In truth, in the flesh, my living Jane.
You touched me, sir. You hold with me. And fast enough.
My living darling. Oh, but I cannot be so blessed after all my misery. It is a dream. But kiss me before you go. Embrace me, Jane.
There, sir. And there.
Oh, it is you. Is it, Jane? You are come back to me, then?
I am.
And you do not lie dead in some ditch under some stream? And you are not a pining outcast among strangers?
No, sir. I am an independent woman now.
Independent? What do you mean, Jane?
My uncle in Madeira is dead. And he left me £5,000.
Ah, this is practical. This is real. I should never dream that. Besides, there is that peculiar voice of hers, animating and piquant as well as soft. It cheers my withered heart. It puts life into it. What, Janet? Are you an independent woman, a rich woman?
Quite rich, sir. If you won't let me live with you, I can build a house of my own close up to your door. And you may come and sit in my parlor when you want company of an evening.
But as you are rich, Jane, you have now, no doubt, friends who will look after you and not suffer you to devote yourself to a blind lamester like me. You are young. You must marry someday.
I don't care about being married.
You should care, Janet. If I were what I once was, I would try to make you care. But a sightless block.
Sir?
Jane?
It is time someone undertook to rehumanize you. Your hair reminds me of eagle's feathers. Whether your nails are grown like bird's claws or not, I've not yet noticed.
On this arm, I have neither hand nor nails. It is a mere stump. A ghastly sight. Don't you think so, Jane?
It is a pity to see it. And a pity to see your eyes. And the worst of it is, one is in danger of loving you too well for all this.
I thought you would be revolted, Jane.
Did you? Have you a pocket comb about you, sir?
What for, Jane?
Just to comb out this shaggy black mane. I find you rather alarming when I examine you close at hand.
Am I hideous, Jane?
Very, sir. You always were, you know.
The wickedness has not been taken out of you wherever you have sojourned.
Yet I have been with good people, far better than you. Possessed of ideas and views you never entertained in your life.
Who the deuce have you been with?
If you twist in that way, you will make me pull the hair out of your head.
Who have you been with, Jen?
You shall not get it out of me tonight, sir. Now, you are read up and made decent.
Jen, who?
Now, let me leave you an instant to make a better fire and have the hearth swept up. Can you tell when there is a good fire?
Yes. With the right eye, I see a glow.
And you see the candles?
Very dimly. Each is a luminous cloud.
Can you see me?
No, my fairy. But I am only too thankful to hear and feel you.
When do you take supper?
I never take supper.
But you shall have some tonight. Well, I'm hungry. So are you, I dare say, only you forget. I will go and see Mary in the kitchen.
Just one word, Jane. Were there only ladies in the house where you have been? Jane, answer me. Mary? Mary?
Good morning, sir.
Mary, is Miss Eyre here?
Ah, she is indeed, sir.
Oh, I feared she might depart as suddenly as she came. Which room did you put her in?
In small one above the parlour.
Was it dry?
You may depend on it, sir.
Is she up?
Aye, she's moving.
Go and ask her if she wants anything and when she will come down. Oh, and see if she...
She's coming now, sir.
It is a bright and sunny morning, sir. The rain is over and gone. And there is a tender shining after it. You shall have a walk soon.
Oh, you are indeed there, my skylark. Come to me. You are not gone, not vanished. I heard one of your kind an hour ago, singing high above the wood, but its song had no music for me any more than the rising sun had rays. All the melody on earth is concentrated in my Jane's tongue to my ear. All the sunshine I can feel is in her presence.
Most of the morning we spent in the open air. I sought a seat for him in a hidden and lovely spot. Pilate lay beside us. All was quiet. He broke out suddenly while clasping me in his arms.
Cruel, cruel deserter. Oh, Jane, what did I feel when I discovered you had fled from Thornfield? You should not have left me thus. You should have told me your intention. I would have given you half my fortune without demanding so much as a kiss in return, rather than you should have flung yourself friendless on the wide world. What did you do, my darling? Let me hear now.
I began the narrative of my experiences for the last year. I softened considerably what related to the 3 days of wandering and starvation. Though the little I did say lacerated his heart deeper than I wished. Of course, St. John River's name came frequently in the progress of my tale.
This St. John, then, is your cousin?
Yes.
Did you like him?
He was a very good man, sir. I could not help liking him.
And does that mean a respectable, well-conducted man of 50?
St. John was only 29, sir.
Jeune, encore, as the French say. But his brain, that is probably rather soft.
His brain is first rate.
His manners, I think you said, were not to your taste, priggish and parsonic.
I never mentioned his manners. But they are polished, calm and gentlemanlike.
His appearance, I forget what description you gave of his appearance. A sort of raw curate, half-strangled with his white neckcloth?
He dresses well. He is a handsome man. Tall, fair, with blue eyes, and a Grecian profile.
Damn him. Did you like him, Jane?
Yes, Mr. Rochester. I liked him. But you asked me that before.
Perhaps you would rather not sit any longer on my knee, sir.
Why not, Mr. Rochester?
The picture you have drawn is suggestive of a rather too overwhelming contrast. Your words have delineated a graceful Apollo. Your eyes dwell upon a Vulcan, blind and lame into the bargain.
I never thought of it before, but you certainly are rather like Vulcan, sir.
You can leave me, ma'am. But before you go, you'll be pleased just to answer a question or two. You had a little cottage, you say. Did St. John ever come there to see you?
Now and then.
Of an evening?
Once or twice.
Did he study much?
A good deal.
What?
Hindustani.
And what did you do, meantime?
I learned German at first.
Did he teach you?
He did not understand German.
Did he teach you nothing?
A little Hindustani.
Rivers taught you Hindustani?
Yes, sir.
Only you?
Only me.
He wished to teach you?
Yes.
Of what use could Hindustani be to you?
He intended me to go to India with him.
Ah. Here I reach the root of the matter. He wanted you to marry him.
He asked me to marry him.
That is a fiction. An impudent invention to vex me.
I beg your pardon. He asked me more than once. And was stiff about urging his point as ever you could be.
Why do you remain pertinaciously perched on my knee when I gave you notice to quit?
Because I am comfortable there.
Jane, leave me. Go and marry Rivers. Go with the husband you have chosen.
He is not my husband, nor ever will be. He does not love me. I do not love him. He wanted to marry me only because he thought I should make a suitable missionary's wife.
What, Jane? Is this true?
Absolutely, sir. All my heart is yours. It belongs to you. And with you it would remain, were fate to exile the rest of me from your presence forever.
Oh, Jane. But I want a wife.
Do you, sir?
Yes. Is it news to you?
Of course. You said nothing about it before.
Is it unwelcome news?
That depends on circumstances, sir. On your choice.
Which you shall make for me, Jane.
Choose then, sir. Her who loves you best.
I will at least choose her I love best. Jane, will you marry me?
Yes, sir.
A crippled man, 20 years older than you, whom you'll have to wait on.
Yes, sir.
Truly, Jane?
Most truly, sir.
Oh. My darling, oh, God bless you and reward you. Oh, I have longed for thee, Janet. Oh, I have longed for thee. Some days since, a singular mood came over me, and I asked of God in anguish and humility if I had not been long enough desolate. That I merited all I endured, I acknowledged. That I could scarcely endure more, I pleaded. My heart's wishes broke involuntarily from my lips, and the words, Jane, Jane, Jane.
Did you speak those words aloud?
I did, Jane. If any had heard me, he would have thought me mad. I pronounced them with such frantic energy.
And it was last Monday night.
Yes. But what followed is the strange point. As I cried your name, a voice, I cannot tell whence the voice came, but I know whose voice it was, replied, I am coming.
Wait for me.
Oh.
And a moment after went whispering on the wind the words, "Where are you?" Oh, I could have deemed that in some wild, lone scene I and Jane were meeting. In spirit, I believe we must have met. For those were your accents, as certain as I live. They were yours. Now I thank my Maker that in the midst of judgment he has remembered mercy. I thank God. Yes. I thank God.
And so I married him. Diana and Mary approved the step unreservedly. How St. John received the news, I don't know. He never answered the letter in which I communicated it. Mr. Rochester continued blind the first 2 years of our union. But eventually he recovered the sight of one eye. And when his firstborn was put into his arms, he could see that the boy had inherited his own eyes as they once were. Large, brilliant, and black. And I know what it is to live entirely for and with what I love best on earth. I hold myself supremely blessed. Blessed beyond what language can express. Because I am my husband's life as fully as he is mine.
In the fifth and final episode of Jane Eyre, adapted for radio by Barbara Cooper from the novel by Charlotte Bronte, Jane Eyre was played by Meg Wynne-Owen, Mr. Rochester by Patrick Allen, and St. John Rivers by John Rye. Diana Rivers, Patricia Leventon, Mary Rivers, Kate Binchley, servant girl Jane Knowles, innkeeper William Edel, John Ronald Herdman, and Mary Catherine Parr. The serial was produced by Betty Davis.